Site one, call to order.
We hope to keep meeting quarterly, if not sooner, if we need to, if there's business to be taken care of. As everybody knows, we are meeting because of the executive order number 2 from the governor that establishes the migrant coordinator position, the migrant affairs office, and the migrant task force. And the reason for it, of course, is because there are many problems that migrants have in the summertime and year-round also that have to be taken care of, and it gets us all together to try to work them out. First of all, I'd like to get, there's some new faces here today. I'd like to get everybody to introduce themselves, starting over on this side with Ben. Introduce yourself and tell us who you're from, please.
My name is Antonio Ramirez. I work with the Migrant Affairs Office.
I'm Nick
Bowen.
I'm with the Migrant Affairs Office.
I'm Michael Clark from St. John's.
I'm Mike from the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm Susan
Manchin
from the Coalition of Churches for Migrant
Concern. Ron O'Neill, Governor of OYO.
Robert Cavigna, and I'm with the State Migrant Affairs Office.
Frank Guzman, Migrants in Action.
Felipe Ramirez, Montero State College.
Tony McAllister, Department of Public Welfare.
Ian Zvikas, Nurse of Martin Hill.
Judy Granberry, Department of Public Welfare.
Wayne Onset, Oldham County Government.
George Hollander, for Walt Carlson, the State
Joe Guy, is that Migrant Affairs Office?
How about back here on this side?
Mark Fisher, Minnesota Migrant Council.
Yes.
And my wife, and your son.
Sharon
Meyer,
I would be
back.
Judy Meyer,
from
the
Department of
Welfare.
Ramon Sanchez, from the Department of Services.
Jim Creel, from St. John's.
I'd like to welcome everybody to our meeting today. We'd like to have Felipe Ramirez welcome us, if you would please. I've known Felipe for quite a few years from St. Paul. He's always been involved, as far as I know, in Chicano activities and community activities. Felipe?
Thank you. It is indeed an honor and a pleasure to have all of you here at Mankato State College. So in behalf of the Mexican American Union, which is an organization on campus, and I'm sorry to say that none of them are here. All of them, I made sure they're in class, so that's where they are. And the Minority Group Study Center's Activities Committee. It is nice to have a group of dedicated people like yourselves trying to help the people that really need the help, and that's our migrant brothers and sisters. So if there's anything that we can do, please ask. And I would like to say, because I have the permission from the president to say that, in Espanol, mi casa es tu casa, you know. Our house is your house. Gracias.
Thank you.
Just some very quick housekeeping and chores that we got to take care of. Number one, there's been a change in the schedule. Just to avoid the traffic of student cafeteria situation, instead of eating lunch from 12 to 1, we'll go to lunch at 11:20. So that the presentation by Mr. Ron O'Neill will come at 12:20. Okay, so you just kind of pull it behind a little bit. Another thing that I want to emphasize, for the private sector, just before lunch or when we're ready to go to lunch, those individuals that are paid, who are private sector people, who are paid their lunch, please see Vicky Bowen, because we'll have tickets. And of course, as we did before, the individuals that need to pay will go through the line and pay, whatever it is.
Taco John's?
Not Taco John's. No more Taco John's. Now we're going to go through. I change the pace here.
Thank God.
We have Sabato.
Another item of importance to the private sector is that we want to make sure that before you leave today, you sign the expense sheets and also submit your mileage and other receipts you might have, so that we have that taken care of right away. And if those individuals don't give us that information, you might find yourself not being reimbursed. third item that needs to be taken care of is that we want to make sure that when resolutions or motions are presented on the floor, that they are done clearly, loudly, so that Vicky can take it down and write it. Even though we have tapes, we found it very difficult the last time. First, due to the malfunction of the tape, it was very blurred and we couldn't hear it. It was very hard to kind of come up with a minute that we did submit. And so we want to make sure that we have the accurate wording, so we want it very clearly and loudly and slowly, so that we can take it down. With that in mind, I return the chair to the chairperson.
I take it you all received a packet from the Migrant Affairs Office of the some literature, including the minutes of the last meeting. So I guess that's where we're at now, the minutes of the last meeting. It is your pleasure. Second to that, please?
Second.
Motion to accept the minutes as printed. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Now we have a report on the resolutions and other task force requests.
As you recall from the March 6th meeting, there were several key items of discussion during that meeting. And out of those discussions came several resolutions that the Migrant Affairs Office was requested to follow up on and report to the task force members. One of the discussions was the encumbered funds. And I think you received in your package a letter sent to the governor by Mr. Ron O'Neill, and he'll be talking more about that during his presentation. We've been in contact with the Humphrey office. We have not received any word from that office in terms of what is being done on the national level. Maybe Ron may have some new insights into that. So that we have followed through on that, and we're continuing to monitor the progress of that funding. And I would suggest that I would leave it up to the presentation at a later time to get the more detailed information. Another resolution and request to the Migrant Affairs Office was the issue of the pre-occupancy, if you will, issue. And it was motioned that a letter be sent to the Labor and Industry Department requesting an update as to what had been accomplished, and that the Migrant Affairs Office participate with that setting up of a schedule to visit growers, because as you will recall, there was quite a bit of concern by grower Davies that they needed someone to check their homes, the new buildings, etc. So the letter, and again, I think that all of you received my report, the one that was requested through the motion, that within 15 days we submit a written report as to what was occurring, and I sent that to the task force members. And also Mr. Bruce Swanson will be speaking about that at a later time. We were also requested to participate in the setting up of two committees. As you recall, I had made a recommendation that a committee be set up for bylaws and procedures. In your package, you received the names of those individuals who've been appointed to that subcommittee. and also the members of the Subcommittee on Health Issues. Because again, during the meeting of March 6th, we had a long discussion about concerns on health issues in the Owatonna area. Both of those committees have met. And you have before you a document that is a draft of bylaws. And Mr. Frank Guzman, the chairperson, will be speaking more about that. Minutes of the Subcommittee on the Health Issues Committee have not gone out yet, but they're in the process of being sent out. We're a little delayed. But I think it was a good discussion. We talked about different issues at that meeting. We decided that maybe we should meet again and deal with only one of those issues and pursue it. So that will be coming up. And finally, we were requested by MMC to set up a meeting or help in the arrangements of a meeting between the governor and MMC. That too was accomplished. And the governor and MMC personnel, MIA, in our office met in March. So all of the requests have been followed through and accomplished. Some may be continued because of the work that needs to be dealt with, and so those issues that have to be continued will be continued by our office. And that is my report on the request, Mr. Chairperson.
Okay, Roberto. As Roberto has mentioned, out of the resolutions at the last task force meeting, we gave the chair the authority to set up committees they saw fit as the issues arose. I went further than that. I set up committees where I involved everybody in the committees, but I stopped short of that because I feel that maybe we should be doing is waiting for issues to come up before we really notify you about the committee assignments. We have two committees, and that's the health and the bylaws. The health met one time, the bylaws met twice, and this is their latest draft. I'm not sure what to do with it next. It's a draft, and as I understand, most of the things that come through here will have to be okay by the Commission of Administration anyway. So I don't know whether or not we send these things to the Commission of Administration and wait for some comment back to us again, or whether here as a group we should be making comments on the reports that come back to the committees.
Can I just suggest that I think that was a very small committee that, maybe the committee that was appointed was larger, but the second time that we met only two from the committee, well, really one, because I was substituting for another person. I think it would be very good if the rest of the group here would react to these, and that reaction is included in what's sent to the administration department for approval. We didn't have any heads together on this.
Yeah.
I think that, we'd be here all day if we went through section by section. I don't think that's what you mean. But obviously, I think we will have to review them in writing. But I wonder if there has not really been a discussion of the purpose of the task force. In other words, is it task-oriented, or is it advisory and communication-oriented? And the executive order isn't clear on that. And I'm not sure who should decide which it should be, but I think that's a major issue that perhaps, in fact, I think you're definitely the task force should have input. What is our main function? What are we doing?
Roberto, can you give us any clarification on Ann's statement?
Yes, I think that, as I understand the Executive Order 92, this task force is both an advisory and, if you will, a task force-oriented group. If you're going to advise the Migrant Affairs Office and the Commission of Administration, it would be on policy and certain procedural changes that we would hope to do. And that, I would suggest, would be having to do research, having to come up with the data in order to make that kind of a recommendation or suggestion of follow-up on the work task. So I see it as both not only a task-oriented group, but in order to be to serve the purpose of advisory for the commissioner to then approach the governor, I would imagine. That's my interpretation. And I think that maybe Estolio can help out on that for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know how many of you have copies of the executive orders. If you don't have a copy, could you please take it up at that table? Because I believe that that's a very important question. The question is, what is the function of the task force? And I think that the executive order gets as specific as, you know, as those kind of documents can get. If you would turn to page 2 of the executive order number 92. It states who the task force should be made up of. And then A, B, C, D, E, and F gives a brief outline of the functions of the task force. So basically it's to advise the commissioner on plans for migrant workers, to assist the state coordinator of migrant services in developing coordinated plans, to assist the state coordinator in pursuing immediate agency response to emergency needs, to serve, we're on page 3 now, D, to serve as a source of information, E, to research, formulate, and advocate plans, programs, and policies, F, to review and make comment to the governor, the legislature, the commissioner of administration, state agencies, and the public regarding all of the migrant services and plans and needs in that area. So briefly, we have to deal with plans, programs, objectives. Also, one of the tasks of the task force is to assist in getting immediate response to emergency type needs. Also to review and comment, make recommendations to the legislature and the governor and the state. So, you know, that, I think that gives you quite a bit of leeway.
Dr. Piper?
I'd like to suggest that this is a pretty specific charge as those things go, and that it be included if we are going to have bylaws, that we certainly want to have the official assignment of our charge by the commissioner that establishes this task force in the bylaws. And I suggest that Article 2 should be revised to include these 6 points that are our official purpose, as I see it. I think the purpose, as stated, is trying to compress that into a couple of states. But I don't see a reason to do that. I think it's more specific and clearer to simply take it out of the charge signed by the governor, an executive order, and to include that as Article 2 as our purpose. That would be my recommendation.
That is not, and you know, our committee did consider that and then decided to shorten it. So that was considered.
We're serving as an advocate group, and I gather that's one of the things that we can do. How hard we push in some work is depends upon the temperament and the reading of the political realities of this group.
So then what would be your pleasure on the bylaws report? Should we have discussion on it today, go through it? Should we take it back with us, digest it, send something back in writing? What would you like to do?
What's the urgency, right?
I don't know if there's any urgency at all. Roberto, about your office?
I'd like to suggest that it's urgent in that otherwise we don't know what we're doing. This sort of sets the framework and sets up the system whereby this outfit operates.
I agree with that kind of interpretation. It would facilitate the kind of input and output that we can get out of this task force if we had some document to guide us. And as a suggestion that follows from that is that although we may not want to spend a major part of this meeting to deal with the bylaws, I would suggest another alternative, and that is that if we would take it home and within the next 2 weeks send us the written kind of interpretation making sure that it coincides as closely as possible to the executive order so that approval from the commissioner will be forthcoming and also from the task force. That would be one suggestion I would have.
I think to take it home and write about it, you still don't hear other people's ideas. And I think the sharing of ideas is what at least I as a member of that committee or substituting in that committee felt that there weren't enough heads together on it when we did it. And I'd like to hear other people's reactions. And we're not going to if we go home and do it privately.
Okay.
I'd like to hear a motion to the effect that we work on today. Heard the motion and second.
I share the sense of urgency. I'm also concerned the other side about the amount of time that we go into it. And I'd like us to deal with the issue and place a time limit on it.
Okay, you want to deal with the time now or after?
Mr. Chairman, I amend that motion to read that 10-minute limitation.
Yeah, I would think so. Yes.
Would it be possible to table it until after lunch, do it immediately after lunch when we had time to look at it and write our own comments on, I don't know about you, but I can't think of the best.
Is that okay with everybody? Okay, why don't we do that after lunch? We'll take that up again, right?
Yeah, now do you want to just drop the motion or what now? Or do you want to amend it further? There's an amendment to the motion that has to be taken care of, and also the motion itself, and probably a second amendment to that motion because we're going to table it until after.
Mr. Chairman, I rescind the amendment to the motion.
And what about the motion itself? That's withdrawn also.
Withdrawn?
Okay.
We're on target.
Okay, now what did you say something about the health report? I mean, I didn't catch it earlier. The health committee met. Is there a report out of them?
We have minutes, but we have not had the chance to duplicate and send out to all the members of that subcommittee the minutes. And so the kind of description I gave earlier was that we talked about a lot of issues and we decided that we would meet again and deal with just one issue. And follow up on that one issue. So minutes of that subcommittee will go to the committee members and also to the other task force members. And that would be forthcoming.
Another question I've got on the committees. Is that these committees have met and some people have had to come from across the state to get there. And do we know what the position is, the administration about reimbursing some people that have to come in?
No, we don't, and simply because of budget constraints. If I had the decision, about reimbursement, I agree. If we want to have people participating, especially from the private sector, we need to kind of provide some reimbursement of funds that are spent because people come from Morehead. And we met in the health department, and that's quite a ways, travel. Either you drive down or you fly. However, the budget that we presently have does not reflect that kind of planning, and therefore I would suggest that the task force and through the leadership of the co-chairpersons approach the administration if there's any other means of alleviating that situation. At the present time, I don't see any way of reimbursing those individuals.
Okay, next we have the food stamp follow-up report.
Mr. Chairman, do you have a motion to that effect
that the task force will approach the Department of Administration with that question?
I personally find it very difficult to come if I'm not
okay.
Reimbursed, because every penny that goes
into
travel comes out of patient care, and no way.
Maybe we should have a motion to that effect.
Anybody
want
to
make a motion?
Second.
Motion made and seconded that the chairperson meet with the commissioner of administration and discuss the reimbursement of members that go to the committee meetings. Any
all
discussion?
Aside, Lori and I and Judy have a bummer ride today. because we don't have any money.
Yeah, I saw them hitchhiking down. Yeah,
now, if anybody cares, make a motion.
Any discussion on this first motion? Be all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Was opposed? So ordered. Jay, is there anything we can do with that as far as motion? Is that pretty well dead until July or something?
July, we will rise again.
Okay.
We're going to buy Hondas.
Okay, now I'd like to get a food stamp follow-up report. Dr. Lori McAllister, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Welfare.
Jay Bamberry, who is the director of our Office of Low Income, will give you the particulars of the report here. I want to introduce this, however, by stating that beyond the area of food stamps, I think we are, and as Jay's report will show, we are focusing very particularly on the area of food stamps. But as far as I'm concerned, and I am here to speak for the department is committed to the task of making the various social service and other public assistance programs which we have in the state of Minnesota available and accessible to the migrant people who come to this state to work, and also to the migrants who settle in the state of Minnesota. We are, I think, as aware as anyone else of the problems and difficulties involved in this kind of a task. We are confronted, and Jay, I think, will get into some of the details on this and some of the obvious lacks of authority that we have in the central office, problems with federal regulations, problems with great problems with tradition, attitudes, and so forth. We are committed, however, irrespective of these kinds of problems, to making these services and these assistance programs available and accessible. We propose to do that basically at this point, I think, by putting our, hopefully, our money and our actions where our mouth is, and by bringing the influence of the department to bear on all the service elements that we have, and particularly the county welfare departments, to assist them in accomplishing these tasks, and at times, I think, to push them in accomplishing these tasks. A program oriented at migrants, at least insofar as we're talking here about the migrants, the individuals who come to Minnesota and leave that part of that population, I think we have a ready-made means of judging on a periodic, definitive basis what happens. It's probably less easy to judge success or lack of it in the question of the migrant individuals who settle out, become melded into the population, more difficult to follow, perhaps. But we do have opportunities to make some judgments about what happens in a very specific period of time each year to those individuals who come to Minnesota to work in the agricultural field. And we ask your support. That's why we're here also. And we hope to be able to deliver. So without further ado, I'm sure you're interested in the specifics of our efforts in the food stamp and other areas, and I'd like to turn this over to Jay Bamberry at this point.
The first thing I want to do is a fatherly function. The tradition got established in our family when my oldest daughter was six that if I had to fly any place for a meeting, I'd take one of the kids along. So I took Chris when she was six. The last session we had of this group up in Moorhead, my daughter Sarah had turned six and reminded me very forcefully of the tradition that had been established, so I proceeded to take Sarah along with me. What happened is that she met some of the folks in this group. Some people took her swimming and some for walks, and she drew pictures, and it was just a very precious time for her. So last night when she found out that I was coming down to Mankato and would be meeting with the same group, she wanted to come along. Well, I exercised my fatherly prerogative and indicated for a number of reasons that it couldn't work out today. So she decided on her own that she wanted to get a message to you anyway. So she sat down, and I just wanted to share with you the little card that she wrote. She says, "I hoped I could come, but I can't." And then she said, "Dear friends, I had fun with you because I love you. Love, Sarah." And that's the message that she wanted me to share with you folks. Okay. In terms of time, there's a number of things that show up on this little outline that I prepared that we simply are not going to be able to get into. In one sense, particularly when I get into commenting on the migrant food stamp program, each of the items has its own little story and history. And at some point, we may have a chance just to, over a beer or something, to talk about some of them. So I'm going to have to do some condensing of things. And I'll also mention, feel free to interject, to respond, or raise any kinds of questions. First thing I want to say, though, is that when we talk about commitment, or we can get involved in a lot of rhetoric, I publicly want to, in addition to the comments Loring made about the department, to say that I feel he acted on his commitment, because what's happened is that I'm getting paid, in a sense, as director of that office, to pay attention to what's happening to all poor people in the state of Minnesota. But what happened was that once we got into this thing and started rolling with it, it became very evident that it almost was going to become a full-time task. And I went to Loring, we talked about it, and I would guess that about 80 to 85% of my time in the last 2 months has been devoted solely to activities, development of programs relating to migrants. I'm hoping that just the press of the things that have to be dealt with is going to get reduced. On the other side of the coin, I feel I've cheated some other groups that I have some responsibility for and really have to start shifting some gears. And as I get into some stuff, I'm hoping that become evident that we're not home free yet, but we do have some things going that I'm hoping are going to roll pretty well. On that material, I also added item number 2, migrant daycare program, just as an indication of another area related to migrants that our department is involved with. We do have Tri-Valley Opportunity Council again this year that's going to handle the contract for us. We have had some major physical problems. We're still waiting for the legislature, as I know I'm sure all of you are, to make up their minds on a lot of things. A crucial issue there is that, and maybe this is just an indication of some of the things we went through. We were short on money prior to July 2nd for startup costs. So one morning, we were able to get a rider attached to the appropriation bill saying that $100,000 would be freed up on enactment. Okay, that's in the morning. Late that afternoon, because another group had heard about that, they got the damn rider taken off. And in the meantime, you know, the 4 or 5 or 6 hours, we're sitting there feeling, okay, we're home free. So then we had to get into the legislature again, and the following morning the rider was put back on, and at this point it's still there, and I'm hoping that it'll still be there at midnight on May 19th so that we have the monies that we need. To cover ourselves, though, and we also got into some stuff in the food stamp program, started hustling some foundations for $80,000. So just a comment again on we had funding problems, we had licensing issues, I'm sure you're aware of what has to be done there. Training programs in terms of teachers and curriculum, and then there's a record transfer system that's been developed that people needed to know about. So a whole range of things that went into just migrant daycare program. A second area that we're feeling good about, although I've had very little involvement, simply because it was really pretty well oiled even as of last year, is the fact that in the Breckenridge area, and Ann's been very much involved in that, there is a social service center, and I may be missing a few. In fact, Ann, I keep seeing you're with health services, so I added on my own notes here, Minnesota Migrant Health Services is another group or organization that's involved in making that go. And my understanding is that, a second one will be opened this year in Moorhead?
Yes, and also there are two in the general shelter.
Okay, thank you. Just as pieces of information that might be helpful for all of you to be aware of. Okay. Most of my time I want to spend on the migrant food stamp program. Loring has already indicated that we're facing tradition, attitude, precedent, a whole range of things, and in particular, as we got into this, some very clear legal issues presented themselves. We ended up dealing with two federal bureaucracies, HEW, and as soon as we thought we had something cleaned up on that side to make it nice and rosy, it would smack right against something on USDA's side. And I could spend the whole morning just talking about that part of it. Then some internal policy kinds of things. So the whole maze was what's involved. The other part of the context I want to add to it, though, we have a representative here from Owatonna Canning Company, and I'm very happy about that. To give you an idea of some of the problems, some of the attitudinal things, I want to show you a cartoon that I think helps set the context for what we dealt with in the last 2 months. This is a cartoon that was on the cover of County Social Service Plan, a document that had to be generated. Each county had to generate one of those, send it to the state office, our offices and social services. Okay, to tell you where that county was coming from, they did it. They submitted it, but this is the cartoon. The fire hydrant is labeled DPW, and the dog is labeled the County Welfare Department. That's an attitudinal, you know, kind of thing. There's no problem now in terms of making this public. I talked about it with the director. Okay, this is the one from 1974. The 1975 one came in with the horse branded DPW. Now, I hadn't been aware until, I'm sorry, because Judy Barr dug up this one, but this one had come in from last year. Okay. I mention that to you for a couple of reasons. Loring has already said that in one sense, our department, from a legal standpoint, has no power to mandate. And I'm talking here in terms of the context of getting a migrant food stamp program going. What that meant is that unless we worked very hard and pleaded, cajoled, made some compromise and so forth, in essence, any county welfare department, even where we could document the need, could tell us, take your program and go home. It's that simple. So what we decided early was in some way, we had to find a way to get inside and have a program that would work. And as I'll be commenting in a couple of minutes, we do have that. At this point in time, the director of the agency that created these two cartoons is singing our praises. Now, how long it's going to last, I don't know. But at least as of when? Yeah. Yesterday afternoon, it's gone from this over to this point. Okay. On the material, and I'm going to touch some stuff very, very quickly. There are roughly 29 to 30 counties that have some migrant activity. Very early, we had to do some talking with MMC people, MIA. I'm not sure at what point Employment Services was brought in, to try to get an idea, not only of the number of counties, but what's the variation in migrant activity, numbers of people. And discovered early that probably 6 or 8 of the counties had a very nominal number, like, 10 or 15. And when they said we don't have any need, believed them. We also discovered, though, and we could document it, that there were counties that have a history of high volume, that have need for additional staff, and some of those counties says, no, we don't need any help. And when we started hearing language like, we take care of our own, that made me more convinced that, darn it, somehow we got to do something, because we can, how that kind of thing gets translated. So we did some of that groundwork, sent out some letters of invitation for a meeting on, I think, March 31st. At that point, as I recall, we had 6 out of 29 counties that showed up. And that started to give you some message also. Okay, we kept running, contacting individual counties in terms of checking out need and all that kind of thing. A second major component of the whole thing. And again, all of these are really not all that discreet. They're obviously, going on concurrently. Funding issues. Roberto keeps bugging me. He says, you're always able to get money, but you won't tell me where. Well, I'm going to let you know about a couple places today and then keep a couple more in the back pocket. Okay, we'll compromise a little bit. We knew first that USDA would pick up, as a general rule, 50% of the costs, whatever it costs to run a food stamp program. The other money that we became aware of, and this, I must say, that the department did not act very quickly. Apparently, there was some sense last fall that some, what they call United Migrants for Opportunity money, would be available to pick up 37.5% of the cost. So it came down to, we could guarantee, and I in some ways was naive, I thought we had a fiscal package that nobody could refuse. And I sure found out differently. Because what we were saying was, we'll pick up 87.5%, and all you have to come up with is 12.5% of local money. And at that very first meeting, we got the reaction. $125, God, we can't come up with that much. Another director did the very quick calculating, and he said, hey, that's a good deal. For $109, I can get, in essence, a full-time staff person. Gives you a clue right there, too, that we weren't concerned about what people's motivation was. I just wanted to have a program go. So for one director, it's to his advantage. He's not particularly concerned about migrants, but we'll get migrants taken care of, and he's going to get a full-time staff person for the equivalent of $109 a month. Okay. Then we ran into issues. What's the system we can hire people under? I said, boy, this would be beautiful, because Dick Jonas says, I want the state to administer it. I thought, okay, we'll hire them as state employees. We can put them out in the counties. We go to our merit system and find out that there are some provisions for emergency appointment through the county system. The state civil service says you can appoint three times for three 10-day periods, emergency appointment, and that's it. Well, we're talking about hiring people for up to 70 days. And then you ask, well, how do we get that changed? And then we run into, well, you got to go public, and you got to have a hearing, and you know, all that. So we gave up on that kind of thing. Okay. Initially, the estimate was 21 people is what we needed. Based on our early conversations with counties, it became fairly clear to me that even though the need was there, we were not going to get enough counties to commit themselves to use all 21 people. So then, to be fair with UMOI, we did some negotiating there, and we finally wrote a contract calling for 15 people for a period up to 70 days. And that's the pool that we knew that we would be able to work with. Okay, then, that issue of local match. I think I'm correct in saying, and I want to give credit to the Owatonna Canning Company representative, that Steele County Welfare Department, apparently through the director, went to your company, and they came up with $400 for local match. And at the same time, we're saying, hurrah, the phone rings, and the director says, hey, is this legal? So I deflated a little bit and run upstairs with Judy, and we talk with our attorney general, and we find a way to word it to make it purely legal, because we don't want to lose that $400, because we know we're not going to get it out of the board down there. Okay, so what that did was make it possible then to hire two people, and the counties don't have to pick up any of the tab, and we're now using two people in Dodge and Steele. At the same time, here and where I'm not going to let you know my money sources, there were two counties where there was a major issue of coming up with 12.5% money. For both of those counties, we had commitments that if the county board ended up saying no, we had in essence the check written to plug in. In one of those situations, it would amount to about $600, another one about $150 or something. So we finally got all the funding, you know, kind of stuff taken care of, and it was fairly clean from that standpoint. The major problem, though, was still getting the whole thing, and this is my point C here, operationalizing it. And the rough draft that I had made on my notes, I had operationalizing hyphen nightmare, and when Judy rewrote my notes to send for typing, she took that off. But for about 2 weeks, in fact, Judy came into my office one Monday afternoon and said, my God, it feels like Wednesday. That's kind of how things started to go. The major problem, again, in really getting it oiled, was to keep it so clean and so palatable that the counties couldn't say, hey, you're adding red tape onto this thing, or it's not going to be worth it, whatever. We had to keep dealing with those kinds of issues. Again, I made the comment here, and I've already alluded to it, the authority of the commissioner. Another major part, though, of operationalizing and dealing with the counties was to go through our field representatives, or our regional representatives. For example, I think that part of the success in the Region 4, the Breckenridge Social Service Center, is due in large part to the efforts of a district field rep who was involved in that. A lot of other people too, Ann, but I'm hooking it into what role of our department. Okay, I'll talk to you at lunch about that. Okay, another problem. How do we administer this thing? The first way I wanted to do it was to contract with Tri-Valley Opportunity Council as a subcontract. Tri-Valley was eager to go. They got the management capability. Here's where we ran into USDA. The USDA said it's got to be state employees or within the merit system, or there's no room for reimbursement. In other words, we lose 50% of our money right off the bat. So we hassled back and forth with them for about 4 days, and we had some stuff set up to get Mondale and Humphrey into it and all this sort of stuff. And finally, on a Wednesday afternoon, and this is after a director was in my office on a Tuesday saying, instead of April 25, when we need some help, migrants are coming in, they're coming in this Friday, 30 families. So it's Panicsville. But finally on that Wednesday, USDA said, we'll compromise with you. You can work through Tri-Valley, but you can't have the people do any interviewing, and you can't have them certify. They can verify and they can sell. And in terms of the four parts of the whole food stamp program, my reaction was, what the hell do you mean compromise? It defeats our whole program. Because in essence, what it would mean is that we could hire, train a bilingual person, have them in an agency. When the migrant or migrant family first comes in, they still got to have a staff person there to go through the whole first part of the whole thing. So I said, well, in polite language and with a forced smile, we'll talk to you next year kind of thing. But we're still faced with, how else do we go? In the meantime, we had been talking with Renville County and McLeod counties to have them agree to take on what we call a host county contract, where we sign with them, all the people go on their payroll, and they're assigned to counties on an as-needed basis. It's a whole story to that thing, but neither county said yes. In fact, one of the counties that I was involved with, I wish I had saved my time, because talking with a board member, and he said, yeah, I'm concerned about migrants. They need food stamps, but damn it, keep them out of our new courthouse. That's where it was at. And so, thank you, and you start looking for, some other way to deal with it. What we ended up doing, we still had, and it wasn't up until, I think, Monday of this week, that one director finally called back and he said, okay, my food stamp officer now understands and she's willing to let a bilingual food stamp person come in to work for $180 a week. Because her first reaction was, nobody's going to make more money than me. And if you know anything about county welfare departments, sometimes there are people other than the directors who really call the shots. And that was just another political kind of thing. Okay, another issue we faced, I mentioned dealing with USDA and HEW. We had to do some research on this. In essence, HEW money is being used to match USDA in the question of federal match, that kind of stuff. So we dig back and finally find that in the state of Ohio, they've done that. They've been audited last year, and in some ways, we're still kind of gambling. I think we're going to be okay. But when I found out about that, I figured, God, here we go, right down the tube. So we got that worked out. Okay, the last point there in terms of operationalizing is that an early decision had been made that even though UMOI money said we could use the people for outreach and or certification, that there was no point, given the staffing patterns existing in counties, to generate a whole lot of additional business without having the internal capability to process the applications. So the early decision was that most of the people would be hired and trained to do the interview, the certification, verification, and very few are going to be selling. But in other words, working internally. If things loosened up a bit, then we would shift gears and have them do some outreach. Okay. The personnel thing also was, thanks to Judy Barr, I don't think I could have pulled it off. We had a basic condition, two basic conditions. Bilingual, be able to speak, read, and write Spanish, and secondly, have basic math skills, being able to compute and that kind of thing. Okay, I think originally we had a pool of 12 people. And Judy remembered that the State Historical Society a couple years ago had a project, and they had a pool of people, so dug into that. We came up, I think, with about 125. Then began all that pre-screening kinds of things. During all this, I should mention, very much involved with MMC and MIA, people out of Roberto's office. I also decided that when it came to actually interviewing and selecting, that I was not going to have any part of that for a lot of reasons. We wanted to get people who knew the culture, could speak the Spanish, so forth, to do that. So we had a number of screening selection situations. We also decided that the existing food stamp training program and the manual didn't lend itself that well to a specific program for migrant food stamps. So that meant a couple of things. Condensing and modifying the food stamp manual that we have. As a matter of fact, I think Judy's got a couple pieces of that here if you want to look at it. Ann got a hold of one yesterday. That we're going to use primarily for outreach people. And it's designed so that people who may have to go and apply for food stamps can be helped ahead of time. Here are the kinds of things that you're going to be expected to have with you. What kind of verification, for example? What are the forms you're going to have to fill out? That sort of thing. The second way we'll use it is that the people that were actually trained, I think some of those have some of that material. So in other words, it was a way to facilitate and make the whole operation cleaner, and it's dealing specifically with migrant food stamps. At the same time, we had to develop a training package. And two people in the department, Russ Goodman and Julie Morris, somehow pulled off a 1.5-day training program that works. Because as I mentioned, in that time context, on a Tuesday, the guy's saying we're having people coming Friday. We had our first training program on a Thursday and Friday, and on Monday morning, two people had to be down in Dodge and Steel ready to go to work. And we've had no adverse reaction. Somehow they were able to pull it off. The other kind of problem, those of you who, again, know the migrant scene, determining not only how many people we need, but what are the growing seasons going to be? When do they start? When do they end? And it's been a touch-and-go kind of thing. Some of the people that have come into the training program, if I had been in their spot, I think I'd have said no thanks. Because we had to keep saying, we can't make you any promises right now. Not only in terms of when you might start or when you end, but how much work you're going to have. For example, the original agreement in steel was 1 week on, 1 week off. And the person was willing to go down under those arrangements. They're now working full time. And I'm convinced it's because they could produce. It's been an asset to have them in there. Okay, but that's all been taken care of. Couple of last points. Outreach material, I've already commented about a bit. What I do want to do is have you pay special attention to point A. There is a broad statewide outreach effort now going on in relation to food stamps. And for you to have clearly in mind those phone numbers. And to remember specifically that there is a Spanish-speaking person on the staff. So if somebody calls in from Breck or Owatonna or whatever and needs to talk with a Spanish-speaking person, that person is available. That's just part of the statewide outreach effort. Okay, MMC and MIA and Ann's group have that outreach package, that kind of material. Very quickly, we also early decided out of talking with Roberto and some other people that we had to have a way to monitor and evaluate. And no system existed for doing that. So to make a long story short, we had to create one. And again, we've got a packet of material here if you're interested in taking a look at it. Really for two reasons. First, for those counties that in fact did say we need help. We wanted to be able to find out to what extent what we were about really had any kind of impact. And that's a simplistic way to describe it. But the other part, though, was those counties where we're sure that they needed help but are saying no. we want to be able to track that and to document that also. And at this point, we've got MMC involved, MIA, Employment Services, through who is it, Tom Sexton in or okay, whoever Tom Sexton works for, with, whatever. Ramon has been involved with us early. In fact, they owe us something because they were hurting for people, and we generated the people, and we took, we were fortunate. The cream off the top, and then we said, you can have, no, I don't mean it in that way. We had 125 people out of, and I'd say about 50, really, were top-notch, no attitudinal problems. They had the kinds of skill, and we were only able to use about 15, and so we were able to help out. So we got an ace. We'll come back at you sometime. Call in the card. Okay. The last point, H there, just tell you very, well, you can read it, I guess. We have the two people now working in Dodge and Steel. We did complete another training program last Friday, and as of June 2, the person will be going in and Sheridan, Redwood, and Sibley. We were also able to work out, and I didn't think this was possible, we have two people going into Hennepin. And the day I went over for the meeting with Hennepin County, they had a one-page analysis of their need, and Frank read this thing, and we thought, here we go. The last statement said, based on this analysis, we don't have any need in Hennepin County. That's where we started out from. We have two people going into Hennepin. Didn't have to bribe at all. I think just took a hard look at, they admitted, we really don't know how many Spanish-speaking people we have, how many migrants we have, whether they're white or black or Native American. So that's going to be outreach stuff. I feel super good about Ramsey. Those of you who are familiar with Ramsey County, you know that their board has been chopping budget and suggesting strongly that they decrease staff. At this point, we will have four people going into Ramsey, two to work internally in the certification process, and two that will be outreach people. And to me, this is the part that I never even dreamt about. They will be assigned to Minnesota or Migrants in Action and the local Ramsey Action Program for outreach purposes, to be supervised by Frank and people from that agency. It really worked out nice. Oh, plus the fact, and this is where that second check I had ready to go, we didn't have to use it. Somehow, Ramsey County Board came up with a 12.5% local match. And I don't even know if I'm ever going to find out how it happened, but okay. Frank was involved and some other people, but I guess part of what I'm saying is that we just feel very good about what's happened in 2 months. I had my doubts about whether it could be pulled off, but a lot of people really struggled and worked very hard, and